Thank you for joining me again. So far, we have considered two issues of distinction. The first was the existence of God, which is going to be different between people that don't believe in God, the atheist and the agnostics on one hand, and then you have a different view of God between the Buddhist and the Hindu, the Jews, the Muslims, Christians, etc. on the other hand. Then we discussed the identity of God, which distinguishes between the Buddhist, the Hindu, the Jews, the Muslims, the Christians, etc. And in doing so, we briefly surveyed evidence that supports a belief that God does exist, and that the God of Abraham, in other words, the God of the Bible, is the one true God. Our next issue of distinction, the one we're going to discuss today, concerns the identity of Jesus of Nazareth. Jews and Muslims believe that Jesus was real, but that he was just a good man, maybe even a good prophet. But Christians profess they believe much more, that he was the Messiah that was prophesied in the Old Testament, that he was even the Son of God. So today we're going to briefly review the claims about Jesus that are made in the Bible and some evidence that supports these claims. So the claims that are made about Jesus, we first look at the New Testament, where it makes bold claims about who Jesus was. The New Testament presents him to be the Messiah that was foretold of in the Old Testament. We see that in Peter's confession in Matthew 16, beginning in verse 13, where Jesus came into the region of Caesarea Philippi, and he asked his disciples, "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" So they said to him, "Some say that you're John the Baptist, some say Elijah, and others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered and said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered and said to him, "Blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven." That's the same as we see in Luke's description of Jesus' conversation following his resurrection in Luke chapter 24. This presents him to be the very Son of God, again as confessed by Peter here in verse 16 of Matthew 16. And as we are introduced to him in John's Gospel, John chapter 1, verses 1 through 3. The New Testament also allows only two alternatives. Jesus is everything the New Testament authors claim that he is: the Christ, the Son of God, and indeed the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, as Paul would write to young Timothy in 1 Timothy 6, verses 14 through 16. The New Testament is a carefully orchestrated fraud written purposefully to deceive people, if the authors leave us no other choice. And Peter alludes to that in 2 Peter 1. Either their story is true, or they were false witnesses, they were liars. And Paul writes about that in 1 Corinthians 15, and he says, if the resurrection is not true, then those who believe in the resurrection are to be most pitied. And we cannot say they might have been sincerely deceived, especially in reference to the resurrection of Jesus, which is offered as the ultimate proof of his deity and the fact that he's the Messiah. They claim that they ate and drank with him afterwards in Acts 10, verses 39 through 41. In 1 John 1, verses 1 through 4, those disciples that were close to him, they claim that they saw and touched him. Now that leaves us no room for saying that they were mistaken or deceived. They had seen him die on the cross, and possibly had even witnessed him being buried. And then, as prophecy told, they saw him resurrected from the grave. Now there have been skeptics that have tried to offer this as an alternative, that perhaps in their grief and loss over this crucifixion of Jesus, that they hallucinated or saw a grief-inspired vision of Jesus. But hallucinations and visions usually are only an individual experience, and here you have multitudes that have seen it. One person might see the hallucination or vision, but several or many people don't see the same vision at the same time. As it is outlined in the Gospels and also 1 Corinthians 15, the resurrection appearances of Jesus were often witnessed by many at the same time. At one occasion, it was over 500 people. So it couldn't have been a hallucination or a vision. So we really have no other choice. Either the New Testament, with its claims about Jesus, is a book of truth, or it is a bold-faced book of lies. Now, which is more reasonable to believe? Well, let's see if we can't help to answer this question by considering some more points. Let's look at implications. The implications if claims about Jesus are not true. The New Testament, if these claims are not true, then the New Testament is a carefully orchestrated lie. With great accuracy, the authors described events, places, and people, at least those we can confirm by archaeology. Luke chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. If the record of miracles and the resurrection is a lie, then they are very carefully intertwined between both fact and fiction. Is that reasonable to believe? The authors suffered extreme hardship for what they knew was a lie. Many people today will lie if they can get something out of it, such as money or power. But what did the apostles have to gain? What did they get out of it? What did Paul get for holding to his testimony, 2 Corinthians 11? How do we know they really suffered this hardship? The fact that the letters of the New Testament were even saved. For example, consider the letters that Paul wrote to the Corinthian church, 1 and 2 Corinthians. These letters are filled with rebuke of Christians, the rebuke of the Corinthians. The Corinthians would have had every reason not to save these letters because it exposed their faults and their sins. The Corinthians had first-hand knowledge as to whether the apostles and Paul really suffered the hardship that he spoke of in his letters. If they knew the accounts of such hardship to be false, they would have quickly destroyed these letters, considering them to be written by a liar who embarrassingly wrote about their problems. So, especially the author of half of the books of the New Testament, Paul, suffered extreme hardship for a lie if the New Testament is not true. Is it logical to believe that? Another implication is that the authors who were martyred knew they were dying for a lie. You know, it's true, many people in history have died for what was actually a lie. They sincerely believed it to be true, and sadly, they were mistaken. But we have seen that the nature of the apostles' testimony as eyewitnesses of the resurrection does not allow for the possibility. They were sincerely mistaken. History and tradition record that James was stoned to death. It tells us that Paul was beheaded and that Peter was crucified, and some say upside down. If the New Testament is a lie, then they went to their deaths knowing they were dying for a lie. Now, how rational is it to believe that? If suffering and dying for a lie, then that went against everything that Jesus and they themselves taught. That's another implication. In Matthew 5 and verse 37, Jesus says, "But let your yes be yes and your no, no." They believe Jesus to be preaching the truth. Paul says in Ephesians 4 and verse 25, "Therefore, putting away lying, each one speak truth with his neighbor." And we read in 1 Peter 2 and verse 1 where Peter says, "Therefore, laying aside all malice, all guile, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking, Now, does it really make sense to believe the truth and practice the lie and preach a lie? The book with the world's highest standard and loftiest goals was composed, if this is the case, by liars, frauds, cheats, and deceivers. Now, what book presents a higher standard of love and morality than the New Testament? I mean, you take into consideration Jesus' Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapters 5 through 7. You take into consideration Paul's discourse or his discussion on love in 1 Corinthians 13. So it comes down to this: can you believe the New Testament and what it says about Jesus of Nazareth? This is what one must believe if they do not believe the New Testament when it speaks of the miracles, the fulfilled messianic prophecies, and the resurrection accounts of Jesus. They have to believe that it was a carefully orchestrated lie. And it went to a great amount of detail that those that wrote these letters that are making up the New Testament suffered extreme hardship for what they knew was a lie. And it was the greatest lie, if that's the case, of all of history. Those authors who were martyred knew they were going to die for a lie. And in suffering and dying for a lie, they went against everything that they had wrote about, everything that Jesus and they themselves had taught. And somehow, these liars, frauds, and deceivers came up with a book containing the world's most high standard of morality and loftiest goals. I'm convinced that those who do not believe the New Testament are those who have never read the New Testament carefully, and those who have never considered the logical implications of simply regarding it as a mixture of fact and fiction. But to those who will read it, I believe that they will find that it has the ring of truth to it, that it will convince one of the true identity of Jesus of Nazareth. As John wrote toward the end of his gospel, in John 20, verses 30 and 31, he says, "Truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name." What's your view about Jesus of Nazareth? Are you willing to accept the evidence that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God? If so, then with that faith, you have the right to become a child of God and have life in his name. But you have to obey what's written in the book. We read that throughout the pages of God's Word, the New Testament, that obedience, simple obedience, is what's required. You may disagree with this lesson, or you may want to discuss this lesson even further, or other lessons that we've talked about. I would be glad to sit down with you at any time. Just make contact with me. Always bring your Bible, and let's talk about the book, chapter, and verse. Especially if you disagree with me, or if you want to add to what we've talked about, or try to convince me to change what we've talked about. If you'd like to listen to this lesson again, you can go to the church's website, that's churchateastside.com, and listen there. You can listen to past sermons, you can listen to past radio programs, you can read other articles that have been posted in our bulletin. You can see other news that we have posted there. You can also find the times of our services if you'd like to join us. This morning we'll meet at 9 a.m. for Bible study, 10 a.m. for worship, and again this evening at 5 p.m. I want to thank you for joining me today.